The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Here. He lives here.
Great to have you back on the radio. We really missed you.
Chris, I'm so happy to hear you back on the air. I missed you.
I'm really glad you're back on the radio.
Good morning, Chris. How are you doing today? I love the show. Love the podcast. I usually binge listen to it on the weekend.
Chris, good morning. So glad you're still here in Philly.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle. It's a beautiful day.
Nasty this morning. This is one of those rains where it feels like you're standing under a garden hose. I mean, it is a deluge and going to get worse today. Going to get heavy rain, some big wind kicking up, but it is really coming down this morning. Not that most people are going anywhere, so that's the good news. We are because, of course, we're life-sustaining. Telephone number 610-850-0990, continuing that designation. Life-sustaining radio for you. Throughout the midst of the quarantine, the pandemic, can you sense it? Can you feel that the tide has officially turned? It turns out Trump's instincts saying Easter, I think, were actually more prescient and more correct than we realize. I actually think Trump couldn't go out on a limb and commit to Easter. However, remember he originally said he'd like to see the country come back online beginning on Easter. And don't you start to feel psychologically like, I don't know if it was the spiritual component for me as a Christian yesterday. I don't know what it was, but there is something about today that feels distinctly different than the previous weeks, Past Eddie. You sense that?
I do, actually,
there's
just, yes.
There's something, I don't know, it's like the narrative has changed. And maybe too soon, by the way, if you listen to Dr. Fauci. I think this is where you're going to start to see some real fissures happening in the White House coronavirus task force. Did you see that Trump retweeted a tweet over the weekend with the hashtag #FireFauci? Uh-oh. Fauci goes on with Jake Tapper yesterday, and among the many things he says, yeah, we probably could have done some mitigation stuff sooner. Now, I don't know if there is really any kind of rift or schism between Fauci and Trump. We've asked the Admiral. We've asked Fauci himself. To Trump's credit, I've not seen him ever badmouth Fauci. I've never, ever heard so much as a scintilla of bristling or even love loss, not even a gentle nudge on Twitter. Have you ever heard any indication that Trump dislikes Fauci or isn't listening to Fauci in any way? From Trump himself. I've never heard it. I've seen no sign of it, no trace of it. Have you?
No, this tweet would be the first indication ever of what the media's been talking about, this rift between Trump and Fauci.
Now, he didn't, you know, and again, it's always tricky when you're someone like the president or someone high profile. When you retweet things, that means you're, you know, a lot of people, if you're on Twitter, those of you that aren't on Twitter, this doesn't mean anything to you. But for those of you that are, you know, often a lot of celebrities, high profile types, they will say retweets are not endorsements. They're careful to do that for just such an occasion. Because they may like the sentiment of a particular tweet, but they don't like everything about it, or they're, you know, they just think something's funny, but they don't necessarily want you thinking it comes from them, or they would have said it that way. So they'll often say in their, what is kind of known as their bio or whatever, if you click on their account, in their description of who they are, they'll say, retweets of Fast Eddie are not I may retweet something Fast Eddie said, but I want you to know I don't endorse what's coming out of Fast Eddie's mouth on balance. I just like this particular tweet. So, a Republican named Deanna Lorraine, she was out there running, well, she'd hoped to run against Nancy Pelosi. She didn't, I guess, win the primary. But she tweeted in response to Fauci's interview with Jake Tapper where this went down.
Do you think lives could have been saved if social distancing, physical distancing, stay-at-home measures had started third week of February instead of mid-March?
You know, Jake, again, it's the what would have, what could have. It's very difficult to go back and say that. I mean, obviously, you could logically say that if you had a process that was ongoing and you started mitigation earlier, you could have saved lives. Obviously, no one is going to deny that. But what goes into those kinds of decisions is complicated. But you're right. I mean, obviously, if we had right from the very beginning shut everything down, it may have been a little bit different. But there was a lot of pushback about shutting things down back then.
Okay, now how do you interpret Fauci there? If you listen to it instead of just read about it, as is usually the case, when you actually experience something like that yourself, it lands on you, I think, a little differently than reading it. To read it, if you read the headline, oh, Fauci said, oh, yeah, if we'd acted sooner, we would have absolutely curtailed this thing. But we were, you know, ham-fisted. We didn't know what we were doing. And then horse out of the barn and all that. The way they're writing this up makes it sound like Fauci's saying, we acted way too late. If you listen to it, not quite the same. Listening to it, Fauci said, look, I mean, would it obviously have been better if we shut the entire country down the second we knew anything about it? Yeah, that's a little tough to do in a nation of 330 million people and 50 different states and territories, cities, mayors. Don't ever forget, and we won't hear, what major metropolitan city mayors like ours, the Toilet Czar, having the dim sum there in Chinatown, don't ever forget what major city mayors and leaders and states across the country were saying at that time, early March, early March, early March, not January or February, early March, they were saying, go out, have the dim sum, go to the Chinese New Year, have fun, this is a flu, don't sweat it. Trump closed China travel in late January. That was the first kind of official United States act on any level to do anything about this. Now, I suppose there will be big debates about when we knew what and how early Trump knew and blah, blah, blah. There can be no debate, and Fauci's even gone on record and saying closing travel with China was paramount, huge. And at great political calculation and risk, Trump did it. And people like Biden and many other Democrats said it was xenophobic and it was too aggressive and unnecessary. And then, you know, Trump took the next step of closing travel with Europe, which is unprecedented. It's not done. And there were still big city mayors out there saying, have the dim sum, go out and party, don't sweat it. This is just a, and not just anybody. New York City's health advisor, their health director, the person in charge of public health in New York City, was out saying, this is nothing. It's a flu. Don't sweat it. In March, a month ago to the day, 1 month ago today. Let me say this again so it really sinks in, because every day feels like a year, I know, in this situation we've been living in. It's been a month. 1 month ago, listen to me, 1 month ago today, city officials in New York were saying, go out, have fun, don't sweat it, it's the flu. Can you believe that? A month ago, it's only been a month, Fast Eddie. It's not been a year. It's not been 3 months. It's been a month today.
Right. Plus, if you think of like the full scope of what Fauci just said, think of we were at CPAC.
Late February.
Right. When they announced, you know, when Trump announced that Pence was going to head up the task force for coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think if he would have, what Fauci's saying, when they should have closed everything down and the pushback to that. It's not just for the networking and business of the conservative world with CPAC. You have conferences and big business decisions going on in every major city.
Games?
Right.
Major sports games?
So if Trump would have said then, just like, all right, let's shut it down. We have this virus. What would have happened then?
Well, there is no realistic way to do it. You can't on a dime just flip a switch. It's not even doable. I mean, you kind of got to get your head around, all right, what does that mean? What does that look like? And again, even so, he can advise it. Keep in mind, it's funny, when Tapper and Fauci are talking about this, they're talking about it like the federal government even has the capacity to do it. They don't. This is, I don't even know why Fauci accepts the premise, quite frankly. What Fauci should say is, should we have gotten behind the podium at the White House and told states they really should seriously look at shutting their states down? Yeah, we probably should have, and we didn't. But the Trump isn't, it bears repeating because I think everybody's so caught up in the federal, president thing. It misses the point. The president didn't shut anything down. He still hasn't shut anything down. The only thing this president has done that makes me a little, and it turns out we didn't even need him to do it, was when he basically told GM, I don't like the terms of this deal that you're trying to strike with me on building ventilators. So I'm basically going to enact my powers as president to force you to start cranking out ventilators right now. By the way, not for nothing, I have a funny feeling there's going to be a lot of these places that were supposedly retrofitting their factories to build this and that that aren't even going to need to start. We have enough ventilators. New York City is now sending ventilators to other parts of the country. We had enough. We always had enough. We never needed more. Do you realize that? Nothing's online. Nothing's been built. Do you know how long it takes? It wasn't like overnight Ford and GM and these other places were going to just completely start cranking out. It's stupid. Nobody thinks in terms of time when they talk about things like this. I bet you they don't even need to start now. So, you know, the whole, I forget what they call it, Defense Powers Act or whatever. The president forcing GM to build ventilators. I don't even think it's necessary. I think GM's like, shoo, dodged a bullet. We don't need to build them. So, okay, number one, the president doesn't open and close anything. The president purely advises. That's first. Number two, Fauci's saying, if every state in the union would have said, yeah, we're going to shut her down right now, great. A little tougher to do. But anyway, Trump's not watching this. Trump doesn't see Fauci on with Jake Tapper. He's not watching Jake Tapper. He's ticked off at the weekend coverage of Fox News. He's already tweeted that out, too. Said no point in even watching Fox News on the weekend. So this Republican out in California says, she tweets out, Fauci is now saying, had Trump listened to medical experts earlier, he could have saved more lives. Fauci was telling people on February 29th there was nothing to worry about and it posed no threat to the U.S. public at large. And then she hashtagged it, Fire Fauci. Well, first of all, if you listen to that clip, I don't think she's framed it right. Not that I'm in the business of defending Fauci. I do think Fauci is starting to frustrate me a little bit in that depending on where he is and who his audience is and who his questioner is, he seems to kind of answer questions the way the questioner, the interviewer, almost seemingly wants to hear the question answered. Make sense? So it seems like he's kind of playing to his audience a little bit every time he answers a question, Fauci. Bothers me a little. I won't lie.
Well, do you think like some of the listeners that have called and said that, you know, Fauci's in it for like his 15 minutes of fame? Like, do you think personally that that's true?
I would imagine that there could be. I don't know his heart. Again, I don't know this man's heart. That's the thing. I don't normally, people may call it naive, but I can't assign ill intent to people when I don't know who they are. I don't know the man personally. I do know that there is nothing quite like a spotlight. I do know that when you are in, when you've basically been branded the guy that's going to save the lives of the nation, I mean, I can imagine a bit of a superhero complex kicks in. Not to mention a 30-year, 30-40 year, I don't know how long he's been with how many administrations since Reagan
since
or something.
Reagan, yeah.
Been around a long time. I don't know. I do know that he's very comfortable on media. He does a lot of media. The White House seems comfortable letting him do a lot of media. And by letting, I mean letting. They don't have to let him. They could tell him, look, no more. Stop it. And they let him. And he's good. Do I think he's mindful of his audience? I do. Do I think he tells Jake Tapper things maybe Jake Tapper wants to hear? Yeah. Then he comes on shows like this, and I said, do you like this president? Do you like working with this president? Do you? I mean, and it's, you know. I didn't come away from our interview with Dr. Fauci feeling anything but positive about him. And by the way, listening to what he says here to Jake Tapper, I mean, it's worth listening to again. Because I still don't hear it the way this woman tweeted. Fauci now saying had Trump listened to medical experts earlier. That's not really, to be fair, that's not really what Fauci said.
Do you think lives could have been saved if social distancing, physical distancing, stay-at-home measures had started third week of February instead of mid-March?
You know, Jake, again, it's the what would have, what could have. It's very difficult to go back and say that. I mean, obviously, you could logically say that if you had a process that was ongoing and you started mitigation earlier, you could have saved lives. Obviously, no one is going to deny that. But what goes into those kinds of decisions is complicated. But
see, do you hear how she interpreted it in the tweet? Fauci is now saying had Trump listened to medical experts, he could have saved more lives. I don't think that's a fair representation of what Fauci said. So anyway, Trump reads this tweet, hashtag fire Fauci, and it irks him, rubs him wrong. Oh, really? Retweet. And so it's being read now as, oh, Trump's mad at Fauci. But if you didn't watch Fauci on Jake Tapper's show, you'd never know. And most people don't, because I've seen Jake's ratings. Anyway, I have more on this. Hang on, because this is only part of it. It's what Fauci says next. You asked me, do I think Fauci's like kind of a glory hound or whatever? I don't know about that. I think Fauci is enjoying his time. I think Fauci likes being a public figure. And I think Fauci doesn't want to exit the stage anytime soon, given what he said in this interview. I've got more coming up on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Good morning. The toilet czar told everybody to go out to eat. What was the date of that last one that he did? It was middle of March. It was like later than March 10th. I feel like it was mid-March. Wasn't it the same weekend Wolf put a stay-at-home order on Montgomery County? Or maybe the entire area? I feel like it was the same, because I remember vividly it was a beautiful Saturday. And I think it was a Saturday that Wolf issued the stay-at-home order for not Philadelphia at the time, but the surrounding. It had started with Montgomery County, and then I think it went to like Bucks, Allegheny, Chester, Delco. I think, if memory serves. But at that time, if memory serves, Philadelphia had not been put under that order, and he went out there and caught all kinds of hell because he said, hey, we got to remember our servers. We got to remember our wait staff. Get out there. It's beautiful. Tip your people. Be careful, but, you know, no need to hunker down. Get out and support our restaurants. I think that was mid-March. Know what he's saying now? In today's Daily News, Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney said the era of social distancing and other preventative measures will need to go on, quote, at least probably through the summer. So he's gone from in 1 month's time being the, go out, enjoy the restaurants, don't sweat it, to we're going to need to sit this thing out through the summer at least. I'm sorry. I have no respect for that putz.
This is just, it goes to what we were saying on Friday. Why does it seem like Democrats want to keep the economy closed?
Well, look. The longer you can tell the story of a nation shuttered and people dying, the worse they figure it looks for Trump. Look, getting rid of Donald Trump is more important to the Democrats than beating coronavirus. If they can use coronavirus as their running mate, if Joe Biden can use coronavirus as his running mate, and by the way, go ahead and use that and mark it down now. That will be used a lot. Coronavirus is Joe Biden's running mate. You'll hear that throughout the course of the week. That should be stolen toot sweet. And by the way, it should, because after all, it's genius, life-sustaining radio and all of that. 610-850-0990, the number. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Democrats have chosen coronavirus as their running mate, and they think coronavirus is going to be the thing that's going to undo Trump. I was talking to my dad about this yesterday back in Missouri. He offers it up unsolicited. I can't believe they're blaming coronavirus on Trump. I said, you can't? He goes, well, what could he have done? I said, it doesn't matter what he could have done. They got a story of people sick. They got a story of people losing their job. They've got an economy that's tanked. Not his fault, says my dad. I go, I know, but you're thinking logically. It's the emotion of this story. It's the emotion. Now, here's the thing, though, and this is the hitch. When you have people like Jim Kenney and other good leftists out there saying, oh, I don't know, we got to continue this social distancing stuff. We got to keep this going straight through the summer, probably into the fall. Well, what happens this fall? Of course, we know there's a presidential election. This also comes up during the conversation on Sunday with Jake Tapper and Dr. Fauci. And this goes back to my opening comments about Fauci not wanting to exit stage left anytime soon. There are a lot of people cheering this thing going on straight through the summer and into the fall for all kinds of different reasons, not the least of which is the election. They're happy to have coronavirus hang around through the fall. And the reason you're starting to hear, long way around to answer your question, Fast Eddie, the reason you're starting to hear people say, oh, I don't know if we're going to be, I think it's way too soon to be, I mean, maybe we could start talking about limited opening, but we're going to need to probably be hunkered down and social distancing and very limited in what we can do. Oh, at least through the fall. And then, of course, when the fall gets here, expect another resurgence of the virus. I mean, it'll kick back up again. It could spread. It could be like pouring kerosene on a fire if we don't. We really shouldn't rush back.
But you're right. I mean, obviously, if we had, right from the very beginning, shut everything down, it may have been a little bit different. But there was a lot of pushback about shutting things down back then.
Do you think it will be safe in November for voters to physically go to vote at the polls?
I hope so, Jake. I can't guarantee it. I believe that if we have a good, measured way of rolling into this steps towards normality, that we hope by the time we get to November, that we'll be able to do it in a way which is the standard way. However,
what does that mean? What's the standard way? Oh, I don't know, Jake. I mean, I hope so, but, you know, there's just so many variables. Folks, do you think there's going to be a vaccine for coronavirus by November? They've already told us there won't be, right? They've been telling us we're at least a year away from a vaccine, so that's at least March or April of next year. So there won't be a vaccine. What are we talking about here, then? Look, if you're my kids, for instance, my daughter, bless her heart, she's so bored and frustrated and wants to get back out playing and being with friends. And she's so cute. She says often she'll say, oh, I just, you know, whenever they find a cure for this, you know, I don't have the heart to tell her. And so I don't tell her. But there won't be a cure for this. There's not going to be some doctor who's going to hold a press conference and announce coronavirus is dead. Does everybody get that? If we're all sitting around waiting for this to be, quote, cured, it's not going to be, quote, cured ever. There's not a virus. AIDS, you know, this is, Rush has been hammering this correctly, and I'm so glad that he has, because I forget this. HIV becomes AIDS. There is no cure for that. You know that, right? If you contract HIV, there's still no HIV vaccine. There's no AIDS vaccine. There's no cure for it. There are mitigation efforts that went underway, an education campaign, and now there are medications to keep HIV from turning into full-blown AIDS. So, can we develop, are we developing drug cocktails that basically you contract coronavirus and you test positively for it? Are we, you know, developing tests that can spot it quickly, maybe administer you some kind of drug to stave it off from developing into something really aggressive, keep you from being hospitalized? This is a, for all intents and purposes, this is going to be another strain of, like, the flu. So let me ask you something. Do you stay home because of the flu in the middle of a dire, deadly, terrible flu seasons? Does that keep you at home? Has that kept you from work in the past? We've gone through a lot of nasty flu seasons in the past. How do you behave during nasty flu? When you've heard over the years, oh, we're in the midst of a dire flu season, really terrible flu, does that keep you home? Do you wear a mask? Do you not go to sporting events in the midst? I mean, look, before coronavirus, we were going through a, quote, nasty flu season. I took my boys to a Sixers game in February in the midst of a terrible flu season, and we didn't wear masks, and we didn't contract the flu. So what's my point? My point is coronavirus is here to stay. It isn't going away. There won't be a cure. So from a political point of view, is it useful to keep this thing around, keep people in terror, keep people tied up in knots, keep commerce from happening, keep everybody kind of psychologically bound and gagged through November? You bet. Keep the economy choked? You bet. There's a lot of political advantage in that. Democrats conclude it hurts Trump most. And then the pièce de résistance, the, well, I can't guarantee it's safe to vote out there. It may not be safe to vote. Hang on. Got more to say about it may not be safe to vote. 610-850-0990 is my number this morning. 610-850-0990. When you hear Dr. Fauci say it may not be safe to vote, or here we are in April, let's even go with the question. Jake Tapper asking, is it going to be safe to vote? It's April. Why would he be asking, is it going to be safe to vote? 610-850-0990 if you care to jump in and make a wager. I don't know if we're going to be safe to vote by November. I don't know. It's April. It's early April, but, I don't know. November voting? I can't say with certainty. Why would we possibly be broaching that conversation now? Any thoughts, Fast Eddie? Telephone number, 610-850-0990, the number, 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. I don't know if we're going to be ready to vote by November. It may be taking your life in your own hands to get out there and vote. Very dangerous. I don't know.
Oh, we might have to start mailing in ballots.
That's exactly right, Fast Eddie. We might need to take precautionary measures. Why do you think the Democrats have been whipping and whipping and whipping the idea of mail-in ballots? Mail-in voting. Why have they tried to legislatively slide it into the stimulus package? They're trying to... Again, coronavirus is their running mate. Democrats 2020, coronavirus is our running mate. Biden Corona 2020. Go ahead, make the shirt. I really can't say it's going to be safe to turn out. And all you maggots... What did I say last week about Trump voters? Trump voters and Biden voters. Are you going to be able to keep, is coronavirus going to keep you, a Trump voter, from going out and voting? I'll ask it that way. How about that? Right now, let's say the election were today at your polling place. Right now, in the midst of the news cycle as it is, would it keep you from turning out to vote for Donald Trump today? The answer for the vast majority of you, I'll answer for you, is no. And if the election were today and you knew it were coming up today, you know what you would have done? Well, before now, you would have requested an absentee ballot because you're conscientious and you know that going out would have been risky to you or whatever. So you would have requested an absentee. For instance, my, you know, grandparents, I remember my grandparents their last years living with my folks. You know, getting in and out of the house was just more work for them than anything else. They were still healthy. They were still cogent and all that stuff, but they just couldn't, you know, it was a lot to get them in and out of the house, into the car, into a polling place, vote. So they voted absentee the remainder of their lives. They did it from the house. So whether you are listening to me today and you're able to go to a polling place and vote, or whether you vote absentee, you're conscientious about it. You're likely eager to go vote, and you're willing to do so. But I don't know. It's going to be dangerous out there. I can hardly say November's going to be safe to vote. Well, so if it's deemed, if Fauci and others deem it unsafe to vote in November, we got to start thinking about it right now, don't we? Why, there, we could see. Now, let me play this entire clip for you. This is Tapper and Fauci up front here talking about, well, what we could have done better, what we should have done, and then they pivot into voting. I'm going to play this in full, and then I want to dissect it again.
Do you think lives could have been saved if social distancing, physical distancing, stay-at-home measures had started third week of February instead of mid-March?
You know, Jake, again, it's the what would have, what could have. It's very difficult to go back and say that. I mean, obviously, you could logically say that if you had a process that was ongoing and you started mitigation earlier, you could have saved lives. Obviously, no one is going to deny that. But what goes into those kinds of...
By the way, if I may, Gavin Newsom and Inslee up there in Washington, when did we first hear about that nursing home? That, like, the 24 old folks died in that very first nursing home story. Was that early March? I mean, I got to give credit to Gavin Newsom. You know, even Colonel Kurt Schlichter gives credit to Gavin Newsom. Trump does. Out west, where this was exploding, apparently like just a brush fire, they quickly contained it. Meanwhile, out here on the East Coast, who was running around saying, go have the dim sum? Our mayors.
I always hesitate to give credit, but Gavin Newsom, like listening to some of his conferences and seeing what's happening in California, I have to say
he did it.
I've been impressed.
He did what
him.
He was supposed to yes. do. So when we saw an explosion out west and they were dealing with it out east here, what were all our jackass mayors doing? Oh, go out to China, have fun, that Chinese New Year, yay! Out west, they were dealing with it. Did these jack wagons not consider that there's massive international travel happening in their cities also? Did New York City really not think about the infusion of people from Wuhan and other points from around the world that travel there regularly? Was that really not a consideration? While Washington State and California were on fire, they were out in the street going, hey, go have fun, have the dim sum. Jackasses.
The decisions is complicated, but you're right. I mean, obviously, if we had, right from the very beginning, shut everything down, it may have been a little bit different. But
and by the way, what was the president supposed to do? Hey, New York, how would that have gone over? How would it have gone over if Donald Trump held a press conference and said, hey, de Blasio, Kenny, Tom Wolf, Cuomo, you guys, hey, out of the pool, shut your cities down. Here comes coronavirus. You think they'd have just done it? Oh, yes, Mr. President, absolutely. Why do we pay these people? Why do we have state and city health directors? We do have those people. Their entire job is to do nothing but be concerned about the health of the city and the Commonwealth. And in New York, we know what they were saying. It's fine.
There was a lot of pushback about shutting things down back then.
Pushback. There was a lot of pushback about shutting things down back then. He didn't say from whom. He didn't say there was a lot of pushback from Trump to shut things down, did he?
Do you think it will be safe in November for voters to physically go to vote at the polls?
I hope so, Jake. I can't guarantee it. I believe that if we have a good, measured way of rolling into this steps towards normality, that we hope by the time we get to November, that we'll be able to do it in a way which is the standard way. However, and I don't want to be the pessimistic person.
No.
There is always a possibility.
Always.
As that as we get into next fall.
Yes.
And the beginning of early winter, mm-hmm. that we could see a rebound.
Oh.
And hopefully, what we've gone through now and the capability that we have for much, much better testing capability, much, much better serosurveillance capability, and the ability to respond with countermeasures, with drugs that work, that it will be an entirely different ballgame.
Okay, now, hopefully, if this rebounds, and it may rebound, hopefully we'll have better countermeasures. Folks, we're not, if that happens, walking this out, what he's saying is we're not going to be any different fundamentally with this virus in November than we are right now. So if you're someone who's afraid, right, so for instance, I know people who are terrified right now. You know these people? They're terrified. Maybe you're one. I'm not mocking you, but please don't misunderstand me as making fun of you if you're afraid. I understand why you're afraid. You've been made to be afraid. You've been convinced stepping outside of your home is taking your life in your own hands. I understand that. So when you say, well, rebound, I don't know, we could do this, could be November again. We're not, to someone who's afraid, you know what I hear? Oh, well, then I guess this is just going to continue on, unabated. So I can wear a mask. Hopefully you'll have some drugs. Maybe you can take my test and a temperature faster. But this is still going to be here, and it's still going to be highly contagious, and I still run the risk of being hospitalized? Well, no thanks. I'll just hunker down. Do you understand the terror that has been placed in the hearts of Americans by how many? I don't know. I would assume millions. When you say, oh, I don't know, I think November could be just as... I don't know. If you're someone who is wired to be afraid of this, you don't feel any better today. Does that sound like there's an end in sight for you? If you're someone that's afraid, is that an end in sight answer? Oh, I don't know. November. That's like saying, you know, your house partially caught fire. And, you know, they put the fire out and they save the rest of the structure. And then the fireman walks out and he goes, I don't know. I mean, if the wiring in this house, I've seen some of it in there, and if you don't do something about that wiring, I mean, this, I can't tell you for sure this thing isn't going to catch fire and burn to the ground again this fall. I don't know. I mean, good luck and everything. We stopped the fire this time. Like, do you feel good about it? No, now you're on edge. You can't discount the psychology of this, which is purposeful. The psychology is purposeful. Keep you afraid, keep you on defense, but most of all, make you think, well, the only way we can really have an election when we're all so very concerned about getting sick like this is to make it easier for folks to not have to leave their houses. Surely there's a way we can marshal our resources in such a sophisticated country in 2020 with the technology we have. Do we really need this antiquated, silly thing about showing up at the polls? And come on, there's got to be a better way in the era of social distancing. And we can't be sure this virus won't come surging back. Yes, they're setting the table in April for November. I can't be sure it's going to be safe to go vote. We can't be sure. Could be very dangerous. Biden Corona 2020. And it is true that Fauci was downplaying this in late January and early February. Fauci was not the Fauci he is today, to be clear.
So number one, I hope we don't have a rebound that would make this very difficult as we get into November. But if we do, and there certainly is a possibility, I'm a realist, it certainly is a possibility, hopefully we'll be able to respond to that rebound in a much more effective way than what we've seen now in January, February, March.
So you see, we can't even get past this. We've got to start worrying about November. You see how the goalposts keep moving. They just keep moving them. 200, well, it was 2 million deaths. Then it was 240,000 deaths. Then it was maybe 100,000. And then what if we don't get to 100,000 deaths? Then it's been revised down and revised down and revised down. 60,000 deaths. We're at 22,100 deaths officially counted as Johns Hopkins deaths, according to the CNN death ticker this morning. That's 22,100 deaths attributed to coronavirus, even though we know, you know, if you're hit by a bus and during the autopsy they discover coronavirus is in your bloodstream, they will rule it a coronavirus death, not a Greyhound. So we know that inside that 22,100 deaths, there is a lot of room for error. But okay, let's just grant it, 22,100 coronavirus deaths. That's a lot. Sad. You never want any deaths. But as has been pointed out before, how many fewer deaths are there on the roads over the course of the last month? Because nobody's driving.
How much cleaner is the air?
Well,
because nobody's driving.
There's a whole lot of good that came out of all of us just sitting around, not going anywhere. Yeah, the eco-wackos want to keep it that way. But think about the number of people who did not die because they weren't in traffic accidents driving to work. I'm serious. Think about the number of people that didn't choke at a restaurant. Now, if this shutdown continues, people will start to booze and pill themselves as well as commit suicide in pretty shocking numbers. That's for sure. You can count on that, which is why you get the economy reopened. But the point is, folks, 60,000 people die of the flu annually in this country. 60,000. Now, we're at 22,000, and by all accounts, they're saying that we're now peaking / plateauing, whatever you want to call it. I don't know that we get to 60 by summer. Come on, death count, they cheer. I feel pretty cocky in saying I'm not sure we get to 60. Maybe we do. I don't know. I'm not in the prediction business, nor would I try. But I knew damn well when they were saying 2 million and 100,000. I was like, I don't understand the math on that. And sure enough, they moved the goalposts. And now it looks like things are starting to settle down. People are starting to question, okay, do we all need to be shut down and locked in our homes and our businesses shuttered and no income? Is this necessary? Well, I don't know. In November, we could get another resurgence in November. I don't know.
You live here. He lives here.
Chris, great to have you back on the air.
Thank you very much for your show. It is really something to look forward to when you wake up in the morning.
You're the best pig whisperer in the country.
Great to talk to you. My 90 has me for good now.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle.
Also in the midst of the coronavirus battle, a Friday document dump, which we're going to get into in just about an hour in more detail with our friend Andrew C. McCarthy of National Review Online. Hey, a little after 7 o'clock. Hope your Easter weekend was a blessed one. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Saturday was really lovely. Actually, yesterday was pretty lovely. A little overcast, but still lovely. Anyway, first Easter I've ever sat in my living room with the family and watched online. That was weird. Did you stream online services?
I will come clean. I did not.
You just got drunk instead?
later on.
Later, right. I enjoyed it, you know. I had a special podcast offering over the weekend that, yeah, I mean, it still holds if you're interested in it. Just something that was kind of on my heart about people that maybe find themselves right now for whatever reason struggling, whatever that is, whether it's financial, emotional, mental, whatever. Just having a tough go of it. And there are a lot of people for various reasons that are having a tough go of it. I personally know that's true. And I was thinking a lot about the Easter season and what worship means to me and how much I enjoy it personally. And maybe there are people that are not really in touch with a particular faith or a particular church, or maybe they used to be. They're kind of thinking about going back, or they've kind of thought, I'd like to explore it again. But maybe you're uneasy, maybe you're uncomfortable, maybe you're unfamiliar, maybe you're not really sure how to do it or if you want to do it, or you kind of want to dip your toe back in the water, but you're not. I get it. I mean, I understand that. So knowing all of those things and knowing that there are people that are, one, struggling, but two, maybe seeking something else, I had a great conversation with a friend of mine named Amy Banka, who is a United Methodist minister, and we had a very kind of entry-level conversation about the faith, about the Easter season, Good Friday through Easter, what that means kind of definitionally, what it means now that a lot of people are not in church, couldn't worship, had to be at home online, couldn't go. A lot of people said that felt weird. I know it felt weird for me, but we had an interesting conversation about online church attendance, or watching it on Facebook, streaming it instead of being physically in the four walls of the building. How has that changed? And by the way, not just for coronavirus, but maybe going forward in general for Christianity. And is that okay? Is that fine? I'll not bury the lead. She thinks it is. But she thinks there's a lot to be gained from both. And so we don't, it's not a sermon, it's not a preachy podcast. It's just purely for folks that are, I think, looking for a little optimism and a fresh perspective. And particularly if you're somebody, again, that I say is kind of looking to tiptoe your way back into exploring a personal relationship with your faith. I hope this podcast will be a good one to kind of foster that. That was sort of my idea. Not heavy-handed, not to hit you over the head with it or anything. But I hope you'll check it out if you didn't. It's available now at chrisstigall.com, C-H-R-I-S-S-T-I-G-A-L-L, where I do a daily podcast. Had a great Friday podcast, too. If you missed our conversation with the gentleman from New Jersey who took hydroxychloroquine, and he believes that, Cooper, it saved his life. He was on death's door, healthy 60-year-old guy, contracted coronavirus, said felt like, you know, an elephant was sitting on his chest. And he and his wife advocated for themselves, said, give me the hydroxychloroquine Z-Pak drug cocktail. They administered it, and he said within 24, 48 hours, he was good enough to go back home. He's still on the mend, but he believes it saved his life. Really uplifting podcast from Friday as well, in addition to that special podcast, that Easter special podcast. So again, go to chrisstigall.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you subscribe to the Chris Stigall Show podcast, I think you'll enjoy it. We do it every day. I'll be doing one after today's show, as a matter of fact. 610-850-0990, the number, 610-850-0990. So in the midst of all of this, as I said, Andy McCarthy going to be with us at 8 o'clock to talk about the Friday night document dump. We're now learning that before the Mueller investigation began, the FBI knew that at least part of that stupid Steele dossier was based on Russian disinformation. They knew it. They knew it. It's not in question anymore. They knew it. Bill Barr, our Attorney General, talked about this with Laura Ingraham late last week.
John Brennan has come out smashing the president's firing of Inspector General Michael Atkinson. Let's listen.
By removing Mr. Atkinson, and also, I think, trying to send a signal to others, Mr. Trump continues to show his insecurity in terms of trying to stop anybody who is going to expose, again, the lawlessness that I think he not only has allowed to continue, but also that he abets.
I think the president did the right thing in removing Atkinson. From the vantage point of the Department of Justice, he had interpreted his statute, which is a fairly narrow statute, that gave him jurisdiction over wrongdoing by intelligence people, and tried to turn it into a commission to explore anything in the government and immediately report it to Congress without letting the executive branch look at it and determine whether there was any problem. He was told this, in a letter from the Department of Justice, and he is obliged to follow the interpretation of the Department of Justice, and he ignored it. So I think the president was correct in firing him.
And went on to talk about FISA abuses.
Will FISA abuses really be prevented going forward, given what happened here, where FISA judges are not given critical pieces of information, material facts about evidence that inform the government's okaying the surveillance of American citizens?
You know, I think it's possible to put in a regime that would make it very hard either to willfully circumvent FISA or to do so sloppily without due regard for the rights of the American person involved, and also to make it very clear that any misconduct will be discovered and discovered fairly promptly. So I do think we can put in safeguards that will enable us to go forward with this important tool. I think it's very sad, and the people who abused FISA have a lot to answer for, because this was an important tool to protect the American people. They abused it. They undercut public confidence in FISA, but also the FBI as an institution. And we have to rebuild that.
Barr was very clear in this interview. It wasn't just oversight. He believes straight up dirty dealings went down. My word's not his, but I mean, he prosecutable offenses. Now, that's the first time Barr has publicly come out to say, no, what went on here was more than just kind of oopsie, oversight, paperwork problem. This was, and he said it was abuse, but he believes criminal, prosecutable. Ron Johnson, the senator from Wisconsin, editorial in the Wall Street Journal Friday afternoon, Russian disinformation fed the FBI's Trump investigation. The FBI team's handling of these intelligence reports seemed consistent with how it ran the entire investigation. From the opening of the investigation, the FBI team kept accumulating exculpatory information. Yet rather than wind the investigation down, they ramped it up. Minimally intrusive open-source searches became Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrants, and confidential human sources targeting campaign staffers. Then it gets worse. The FBI team excluded exculpatory information from its FISA application. It ignored exculpatory evidence provided by another U.S. government agency. And when that later became an issue, an FBI attorney doctored an email to cover that up. Given all that, it's not surprising that the FBI, on learning their evidence was the product of a Russian disinformation campaign, simply shrugged it off. It will be interesting to see how many of my Democrat colleagues will join tenacious oversight efforts to determine how the FBI misused actual Russian disinformation. That's just a part of Ron Johnson's in full editorial, Russian disinformation fed the FBI's Trump investigation. It's bad. I mean, it's now beyond a shadow of a doubt. The investigative reporting by Catherine Erridge at CBS, she's got the whole thing. A lot of redacted stuff. But they did not have confidence in this stuff. They knew the Steele dossier. They knew it was compromised, and they used it to surveil a presidential campaign. We now know it. I mean, it's now in the document. It's not speculation. We're not reading into it. We actually now have the documentation that these SOBs actively used phony documentation to secure a FISA warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. And by the way, as Andy will confirm, Andrew McCarthy coming up at 8 o'clock, just as a reminder, when you do this kind of surveillance, this rises to the level of the President of the United States. You do not surveil a candidate for President of the United States whom you believe is, you know, there. If there is a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant issued, that rises to the level of the President of the United States every time, every time. So what am I saying? Barack Obama 100% knew. It's not even in a dispute. No reasoned, sober person of the law doesn't understand this to be true. When you administer a federal warrant at this level to surveil others because you believe, supposedly, say a presidential campaign has been infiltrated by a foreign agent, the president of the United States is made aware. So, again, not that this is a shocker to you. This just proves conclusively now. Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, James Comey, the FBI director, all the underlings under James Comey. What a sinister, subversive, ugly moment. The outgoing administration, all of them, were actively involved in trying to torpedo a presidential campaign. A presidential campaign, by the way, that still went on to win anyway. And so, folks, when you look at this news in the midst of the coronavirus story, and then you start hearing the likes of Dr. Fauci and others saying, oh, I don't know. I mean, this could go on till November. Coronavirus is starting to feel a lot like the Steele dossier. I hate saying it because it is an illness. People are sick and dying. But don't you start to feel, isn't it awful? Isn't it sad? What a sorry state of affairs that in the year 2020, you know, I have to look at a virus and wonder, is this the hospital version of the Steele dossier? I'm good today. Nobody said it yet, but there you go. Biden Corona 2020, just like Hillary Steele dossier 2020. I'm sorry, I hate saying it, but I have no choice but to say it, given what we know about how low organized, powerful Democrats will go, given how we know, to what extent we know they'll go to unseat Donald Trump or defeat Donald Trump and regain power. How can you not assume then that they wouldn't use a virus as a means to an end? And when you're in April talking about November? Sorry, folks. Corona is starting to feel a lot like the Steele dossier. You see it differently? Is that out of line? 610-850-0990. 610. I mean, the only difference is, to my knowledge, Hillary didn't have anything to do with coronavirus. She was coughing a lot, though, when you think about it. She spent a lot of time coughing out there. You don't think Steele dossier and 716 on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Welcome to the Monday edition of Philadelphia's Morning Answer. My name is Chris Stegall. Thanks for being with us. Hope your weekend was a good one. Coming up at 7:30, Congressman Fred Keller, Pennsylvania's 12th Congressional District. He has some thoughts on Governor Wolf's temporary release of inmates across the Commonwealth and a drastic reversal. Governor Tom Wolf Friday announcing he will grant temporary reprieves to nonviolent state inmates due to the coronavirus outbreak. Did you see, who's that reprobate DA? Krasner? Did you see his tweet encouraging people to take to the streets? You're not a real progressive if you don't demand people be released from jail this weekend. Can you believe that? Do you feel, I tweeted, I said it's like watching a Marvel film. It really feels, Larry Krasner, the district attorney of Philadelphia, it's a certain kind of evil. It's like, it's a superhero movie. It's like, remember when Danny DeVito played the Penguin and ran for mayor? It's that. He's Oswald Cobblepot. That's who Krasner is. It's like, He's posing as a district attorney, as a man of the law, but what he's cheering is outright degradation of law as we know it. Murder, drugs, theft, I guess the plot has been written. Like I said, it's superhero films. It's like when an evil mastermind villain becomes the top cop of Philadelphia. That's what's going on in this city right now. That he's out there tweeting, you're not a real progressive unless you take to the streets and demand we release the prisoners. The district attorney on Friday. By the way, Philadelphia's homicide rate reaching 100 victims. That's the highest in more than a decade. So, congratulations. Philadelphia's murder rate, highest in 13 years, 100 victims as of Saturday morning. The city's top cop says even with the pandemic, gun violence continues to plague community. Yeah, I don't think there are a whole lot of guys who are staying at home with face masks, waiting to commit their felonies and their murders until the coronavirus clears up. I don't think they're giving that much thought. But everything is now in place to implement her plan, says the Commissioner Outlaw, Danielle Outlaw. She says she now has top commanders in place to zero in on curbing violence. That's good. Good to hear. Overall crime is down, which might have been helped by citizens being hunkered down across the city. But the murder rate still hangs between 10 to 15%. Overall crime might be down. Yeah, that's right. Again, good hygiene and social distancing are what criminals love to practice. I think we've all found that to be true. Some of your most hardened criminals, you know, one thing they always consider, it's just universally so, hand washing, social distancing. You know, anybody that thought about knocking off a store or something, they say, well, not during Corona. That's true. I guess you can socially distance and still kill someone. I mean, in fairness, you know, you can get off a shot and take somebody out without having, you know, stay 6 feet apart. That's good. It's harder to stay 6 feet apart and rob a store, particularly if there are people inside it. Hadn't considered that. Outlaw notes that the pandemic doesn't seem to be slowing the shootings, but remain. I can't believe someone seriously wrote that.
Take note. Just take note. That's all. You know.
I can't believe someone wrote this as a news story. Outlaw notes the pandemic doesn't seem to be slowing the shootings. Folks, I'm sorry. Neither the pandemic nor shootings are funny, but when you put them in the same sentence, it's absurd. I really would have figured people would have quit all the murdering, what with the pandemic. If you're driven to murder somebody, do you think you give a rat's ass about a virus? What the hell is the matter with people? What was social distancing and the masks and everything? I thought, oh boy. Sorry. I'm hoping to be able to get ahead of this before the weather gets a lot nicer than what it has been, she said. What in the world are we talking about? So our new police commissioner is banking on viruses and weather to help her fight crime. That's great news. Let's go to Bob, waiting patiently in Philadelphia. Good morning, Robert.
Hi, thank you, sir, for taking my call. Regarding the Laura Ingraham interview with Bill Barr, why do they always tap dance around these interviews and ask the question, will there safeguards ever be put in place? When is somebody going to be put in handcuffs? And will ever get to Obama? And I hope you run this past Andy McCarthy at 8 o'clock. Will anybody ever be held to account? When will this two-tiered system go away?
Yeah, I will. I'll ask again. I mean, I know, again, Bob, I'll tell you the answer now, and you won't like it. And I'll paraphrase for Andy, but I'll ask him again just because I understand the frustration, and a lot of people haven't heard him say this before. But I spent most of last year talking with Andy about this very thing. When are we going to see people pay for this? Andy's answer to this is, it's not always. Now, in this instance, based on what we found, this is not, now we know that there was actual proof that they knew that this Steele dossier was fake. And they, I mean, beyond a shadow of a doubt, we now have proof. So it may be different now. His answer may be different now that we have demonstrable physical proof. Always before, Andy said that these guys at high levels, you know, your McCabes, your Comeys and whatnot, first of all, if you were to try to prosecute a case like this, the backyard in which you, the venue in which you would prosecute it, will have a lot of judges, juries and others who will be sympathetic to the government, who will be sympathetic to your Comeys and your McCabes. So one thing they have to consider when they take something like this to trial and try to prosecute an establishment figure in government is their venue. They have to consider where it's being done and the likelihood that they'll get a prosecution. That is part of the thing they have to consider. Now, I'll ask Andy, given now the new information that we know, the new evidence that we have, does that change this? Does this make this more obviously prosecutable now than it used to? Because Andy said that there was always a way that these guys could effectively say, it was oversight or it was sloppy or it was... In other words, there's always a way to make the case it was never malicious or purposeful. Doesn't make it any less infuriating. I understand, Bob. I'm not... Don't misunderstand me as defending any of it. It's just Andy has gone to great pains to explain to me and to you over the years. You and I feel like people should be in handcuffs. We'd be thrown in prison if we did such a thing. And I get it. I understand why you're frustrated. Michael's in Delco. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how you doing, Chris? Love the show.
Thank you, brother.
Listen, Chris, if people are apt, tens of thousands of people are apt to get the regular flu, aren't some of those numbers going to get corona and they're going to die of corona instead of the regular flu? Will corona decrease the regular flu deaths?
Oh, you mean if somebody had the flu and corona at the same time or something?
No. There's, I won't say destined to get it. You know, the infirmed get the flu every year, tens of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
But what if that person that was apt to get the regular flu catches the corona and dies of the corona
instead of the flu?
Won't that bring down the number?
Sure.
Of regular flu deaths?
Yeah, no, I've actually said, I mean, I'll bet you if you really want to do this, we can go down the list of things that kill people annually. Auto accidents. Choking. I'm actually serious. They chronicle this stuff at the CDC. You know, with our social distancing and our sheltering in place and all that stuff, I bet there's going to be a whole lot of death that didn't happen because of it. So sure, I think it's highly plausible flu deaths have dropped because there's not as many of us out there interacting. Yes, it's a Monday, 7:36. Hope your weekend was a great one. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Coming up, Andrew McCarthy. Big document dump on Friday. Now we know more than ever before with conclusive proof in front of us that the FBI, the DOJ at large, knew exactly what they had on their hands fraudulently. On their hands to secure warrants to spy on the Trump campaign in 2016. And so what does that mean going forward, if anything? We're going to talk with Andy about that coming up. But meanwhile, back here in the Keystone State, Governor Tom Wolf temporarily releasing Pennsylvania state inmates amid coronavirus. Drastic reversal. Wolf Friday announcing he will grant temporary reprieves to nonviolent state inmates due to the coronavirus outbreak. And this always makes for sort of strange bedfellows. Typically, you would not have a member of the United States House of Representatives commenting on something a governor of a particular state is doing. But in this case, Congressman Fred Keller has some thoughts on the matter, and he's back with us on AM 990 The Answer. Congressman, good morning.
Morning, Chris. How are you today?
I'm very well, sir. Thank you. Hope you had a great Easter.
I did, actually. Spend time with my wife.
Good. Yeah. It's funny. I don't know. Before we get into the prison situation specifically, I'll ask you generally. I was talking off the top of the show. Rightly or wrongly, it feels as though we're at sort of a pivot point with coronavirus and maybe trying to reactivate in some form or fashion, whatever that looks like, the economy. Do you get that sense? It feels kind of like we're starting to pivot a bit?
I think so, and I think it's time. We can do things responsibly. We're Americans. We're all adults. We can figure out how to get through this and open our economy back up.
Has there been, I know the president announced that he's basically putting together a task force to discuss it. Do you have an opinion on it? Has there been much discussion in the House of Representatives? I guess you guys wouldn't necessarily dictate the terms of much of that, really.
No, we wouldn't, but I know we've had a lot of the Skype or the call-in meetings with the Republican conference and our committee work and so on. And, I think that, there's been a lot of talk about a phase four and everything else. I think we need to see what phase three does, see how that works before we do anything to make sure whatever we do is targeted. And I do know that there's another $250 billion for the Paycheck Protection Loan Program. So the $250 billion, I get that works. That's because of what has been done across the nation to shut business, small business down, give them that help. But then let's wait and see how all this borrowing and this money that we've done, takes effect before we even think about going farther into debt.
I was a little surprised to hear it came a lot faster than I thought. The Treasury Secretary said that a lot of these stimulus checks, or whatever you want to call them, Paycheck Protection Act checks, will start popping up in people's direct deposit this week, maybe as early as today in some cases.
Well, the Paycheck Protection loans are for the small businesses going through the SBA and the banks, and then also the stimulus checks, which come from the IRS, which go to individuals. People have already started to get that $1,200 check.
Yeah, that was pretty quick turnaround, really. I thought they were originally saying 3 weeks, so they figured out how to step it up.
Well, they figured out because we got a guy that's a businessman running the country.
Yeah.
So he figures out how to get things done at the speed of business rather than the speed of government.
What are you hearing in Pennsylvania 12 from businesses? Have we already lost some? How sustainable is this? How much longer? What are you hearing?
Well, our businesses are incredibly resilient, great, hardworking, intelligent people, ready to get back to work. Quite frankly, I don't know that we've seen anybody that's, a lot of people have applied for the Paycheck Protection Loans, which is used to keep people employed. Also, can be used for rent or mortgage interest and utilities. That program seems to be working pretty well. There were a couple little clinkers when we first rolled it out with some of the banks, but we got through that rapidly. And it's working very well for our small businesses. But again, they want to get back to work, and that's what we need to make sure we can do safely.
This is one of those rare occasions, this virus, that has caused the federal government and our states, our governors, to maybe interact more than they typically would. It's a great discussion about federalism. The president really, on balance, is a guidepost, but he's by no means ordering anything be done. Our individual governors are largely doing everything. He's just giving guidance. So he's never said shut anything down, nor has he ever really, even when he says open them back up, it's still going to be largely at the behest of governors. So I know you and I have talked before about Governor Wolf's performance here in Pennsylvania. And again, typically members of the House of Representatives wouldn't have much to do with an individual governor in a state. But in this instance, you have real concerns about this prison idea.
Letting inmates out early.
Yes.
The concern I would have is you let them out and they go from one part of the state to another part of the state. You could end up just transferring a virus from, say, you let somebody out in Philadelphia or down in the southeast, and they move to where their family is, in north central Pennsylvania or western Pennsylvania. We know that our prison system at the federal level has some cases of COVID-19. In fact, Elkton is not accepting any people coming in there or in or out because the Bureau of Prisons has shut that down. So, again, I think we need to be very careful what we're doing here, because if somebody gets out of a correctional institution that is asymptomatic, and goes to another part of the state, I think that we ought to be, a little cautious on the movement of the people once they're released, quite frankly.
You know, and I know you're a congressman representing the 12th Congressional District. We had a district attorney, Larry Krasner, in Philadelphia saying over the weekend. I mean, this is a tweet. He's publicly tweeting this out.
But this is the guy that wanted to have the safe house where people could shoot up drugs next to a school, right?
The very one, yes.
Okay.
Tweeting
just
out.
Make sure we put that.
Him. This guy's out there tweeting this weekend that if you're not a real progressive if you're not demanding people be released from prison. I mean, it's an odd time.
So you're going to release people from prison, but you're going to cite people for going to work. Okay, I just want to make sure that I got this right.
What do you make of people now saying that it's going to be, now November maybe? I mean, I can't really be sure. You know,
I can't even wrap my head around that. I really can't.
Why are they doing it? I know why myself, but I'm just going to ask you rather than opine.
Well I hate to try and you know, put motive into people, but for the life of me, if we do that, our economy is going to be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And not that everything, we need to be safe. But again, I'm going to go here. I get closing the schools because Sally and Jimmy and Johnny aren't going to be able to keep their hands off of one another. And you know what happens in grade school. Kids
sure.
bite and kick and spit and all that kind of stuff. So I'm okay with that.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
But as adults, you know, we can social distance. We know what to do. We can do that. What baffles the heck out of me, and we'll go to the governor's performance on some of this stuff. We can go fishing and stand elbow to elbow.
Yeah.
On a creek or in a lake. I mean, I saw it at RB Winter State Park in Union County first day he opened it up. I didn't see it. My brother-in-law did. He was by there because he works for PennDOT, and he drove by there, and there were people all over the place. But yet you can't go out on the golf course. Now, if you're not using carts in the golf course, and you're walking, you can social distance because, goodness gracious, of course you don't want to be near me when I'm swinging a club because you don't know where the ball is going to go. But anyhow, you can't do that. The thing I said with the governor is have a cogent plan when you're doing this stuff. And it came the day after he closed businesses down and said they had to shut, when he left paper mills open but said loggers couldn't go out in the woods and cut down trees. Well, last time I checked, you needed wood pulp for paper. And what better social distancing than being out in the middle of the woods cutting down trees? I mean, quite frankly, you're not usually one on top of the other.
Agreed.
I mean, I'm just going to say that.
And by the way,
my thing about saying a plan,
yeah.
You know, put a plan together.
And everyone building and doing construction on balance, I don't know how many men and women that are out on the construction sites are on top of each other either, for the most part.
Putting siding on a house?
Right.
I've done it. I was in that business.
Yeah.
You're no closer putting siding a house than you are working at the fast food restaurant that's serving takeout. I'm just going to tell you that. You got how many people in that kitchen running around making food, right?
Here's what really bugs me, Congressman.
You can put a crew out there putting siding on a house.
You know, one that really came to mind is now that you're, you know, it's getting nicer, people are, and I know we're, you know, technically this is not even considered, you know, vital or important or whatever, but Home Depot, your Lowe's, your big home improvement stores, they're open, and you go drop in on them, and you can buy bags of mulch, and you can buy potted plants and flowers and all that stuff to plant and la, 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 la. But my, you know, nursery, the local nursery down the street can't sell his plants and flowers and stuff. That drives me crazy for them.
Yeah, so why don't we want the small guy to be able to do it?
Right. Yeah, and I don't, and there seems to be just no urgency.
Small guys are pretty conservative guys, aren't they?
They are. They're very conservative. And I'll tell you
this. They're very conservative.
And I pick up what you're laying down. Ultimately, it is going to be these governors' decision. I mean, President Trump can come out and say, all right, well, let's try. But, you know, if guys like Wolf and neighboring Murphy over there in New Jersey decide they don't want to, I guess they don't have to, do they?
Yeah. I guess we'll see what the public thinks of that, you know.
I just want people to get their minds around the fact that President Trump could come out and say, yeah, we're going to do this, or here's what we think. It still doesn't mean these governors are going to play ball. I just want everybody prepared for that.
Yeah, that's right. And the point I want to say is the president's going to open up, and it's not going to be because – and again, I'm not saying these things. I care very, very deeply about the safety of people, but I also have a lot of confidence in people that they can behave properly.
Yes.
They know what to do. They're smart. They're intelligent and thoughtful. I mean, a small business, the worker that goes to work every day built this country. It wasn't built by the politicians that think they know better than everybody else. Believe me, I worked in a factory, okay? I know how smart people are that work in factories and in stores. I was a short order cook in high school. So these people that get up and go to work every day, great Americans, thoughtful, smart. You know, we can say, hey, here's the issue we have. Let's solve it. They can solve it. They can figure out how to go to work. They can figure out how to be safe, and they can figure out how to run our economy. And I think that it's not that I'm not concerned about safety. I'm concerned about safety. I'm concerned about every American life from conception till natural death. I am. But, let's give them a chance to do what they do best, and that is be safe, care about their communities, care about their friends, care about their neighbors, and work.
Congressman Fred Keller of Pennsylvania's 12th Congressional District, thank you so much for your time today, sir.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it so much.
Have a great week. 748. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Online, download our app, listen anytime, anywhere, 990theanswer.com. I was just reminded of the guy that called predicting 17,000 dead in Montgomery County by June. We should find him, Fast Eddie. We need to pull that out of the archives. I think it's about time to start doing some victory laps.
News, opinion, passion. Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
You know, I got an email from an officer of the law whose name I will protect. But he made the point, Chris, that he said, I'm a little concerned that you might be lumping all we law enforcement officers together out there. I can hear you starting to get kind of concerned and agitated with officers of the law out there pulling people over for their plates. You know, in Delaware, where you papers, please. You do not have the required Delaware plates. You are from the Garden State or the Keystone State. You don't belong in the first state. Why are you here? A lot of that. And an officer of the law said, Chris, don't lump us all in there together. A lot of us don't like this at all. And that's an interesting thing. I'm going to ask our friend Andy McCarthy about that. Former federal prosecutor. We're specifically having him here today to talk about what we've learned about this Steele dossier and the absolute abhorrent abuse of power, and I think is flagrantly illegal use of surveilling a political campaign in Donald Trump, led by Barack Obama and his DOJ. So that's coming up. But I'll ask him, too, while we're at it, because there's a piece by Andy in National Review, Authoritarian Overreach is Unnecessary to Fight the Pandemic. You're starting to see these videos pop up, are you not? I tweeted one out heading into the weekend. Philadelphia police officers ripping a guy off the bus for not wearing a mask. And it's interesting because you're starting to get these people. Well, if he would just wear a mask like he's supposed to, then he wouldn't be physically roughed up and pulled off the bus. Thank you, Rolf. Isn't it weird how everybody kind of picks a side? I mean, there was a time in the United States when here in Philadelphia, there were people that said, oh, let's just leave the king alone. There was a time in Nazi Germany where maybe not everybody wanted to kill Jews, but they weren't exactly excited to stop it either. Now, I'm not suggesting that wearing a mask is akin to killing Jews. I'm just saying the mentality is the same. That weird kind of, if you challenge what the authorities are saying, you are the problem. Not your line of questioning, you are. And your friends and your neighbors, they all start, it's funny, you can hear it. You can hear it in the tone in people's voices. Well, if they just do what they were told, if they just obey like they're supposed to. My wife was telling me that she got, and look, a lot of these people are stressed out. I understand they're stressed out, and I want to be compassionate here. They got a lot of pressure on them. They're worried about getting sick, and they've been scared out of their mind themselves. But, she's at the grocery store, and she's got a clerk behind the counter, screaming at her, 6 feet, ma'am! Stand 6 feet!
You live here. He lives here.
Chris, great to have you back on the air.
Thank you, Chris. I'm a longtime listener of you. I love you.
You single-handedly raised the bar in Philadelphia, and thank you for that.
Great show, Chris. Very enjoyable, and I love your podcast, too.
Good morning, Chris. Welcome back.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle.
Monday. Hope your Easter weekend was a blessed one. Pretty decent, actually, wasn't it? Weather-wise, nice warm day yesterday. Saturday was positively beautiful. I have never gotten more done. I was saying to Christine last night, we were out and back just enjoying the birds and the trees, and I said, have we ever gotten more accomplished around the house in recent years than this, during this time? It's because the kids can't go anywhere. We don't have anything to do. We're not super-duper scheduled with 300 activities, and the kids have got to go here and go there. We're just all at home. And so I've put them all to work, and we're all getting things. I'm telling you, stuff's never been cleaner. The weeds have never been less. Everything's perfectly appointed. Man, I mean, I'm rethinking everything about our lives now, thanks to coronavirus in many ways. Our pal Andrew C. McCarthy is back with us on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Andy, good morning.
Chris, you know, if you're that good at cleaning up places, I'd have you come here if I didn't think you'd get arrested for multiple felonies for losing your home.
You know, I'm so glad you're here for a couple of different reasons, Andy. First of all, I hope you had a great Easter weekend, my friend.
I did, and I hope you did too.
I sure did. Thank you, sir. You wrote a piece at National Review, Authoritarian Overreach is Unnecessary to Fight the Pandemic. I, of course, want to talk to you about the DOJ and Steele dossier and all that, but this is an important thing you know a lot about from a federal law enforcement perspective. And, you know, Bill Barr has even said, like, we're going to take a look at churches not being allowed to hold worship if they don't want to. We're going to take a look at this stuff. So I'm curious, as you look at it from a 30,000-foot federal constitutional issue, when we hear Delaware, for instance, is pulling people over if they have out-of-state plates, or when we see guys being pulled off city buses in Philadelphia because they don't have masks. And we could go down the list of things that we're hearing. The Kentucky governor saying we're going to take pictures of people's license plates if they're pulling into churches. Does this give you pause as a constitutional scholar and lawman?
It does give me pause, Chris, although I think that the legal part of it is secondary, which was the point that I tried to make in a column over the weekend. The first order issue is that, you know, we're a political community, and the police and the public officials work for us, not the other way around. And it's simply a fact that if you took every federal, state, and local government and all of its police officials and you put them all together, they could not conceivably enforce shelter in place and social distancing restrictions against 330 million Americans. So what they need is cooperation and political buy-in from people. And the way to get it is not by acting like a bunch of authoritarian maniacs. So I think this is about as foolish and ill-conceived a policy, aside from the fact that a lot of it is constitutionally, I think, way overboard, because we're talking about people's fundamental rights and the way the Supreme Court interprets that. You have to use the minimal restriction that you can use that allows the government to pursue whatever its legitimate aim is or legitimate purpose in the situation, but still respect the fundamental rights of people, which they are clearly not doing. But I think that's secondary to the fact that this has become, and these governments are becoming, politically illegitimate by these kind of activities.
Yeah, and Andy, I think it was you. If it wasn't, I'll give you credit anyway, because it sounds like something you'd say. Someone said that some of these things that officers have either been asked to do or are doing, it's their job to stand up and say no. Part of my job is to enforce constitutional law, and this is clearly not constitutional. I refuse to engage in this behavior, which could lead them to getting fired. I mean, nobody wants to lose their job, but I mean, was that you? I'm attributing that to you, that sometimes a cop has to say, no, I'm not doing that.
That wasn't me, although I would say this, Chris. You know, they have to carry out lawful orders, and you can't maintain, as you know, you can't maintain military discipline, you can't maintain discipline in the police force, if every officer becomes a law unto himself and gets to weigh
you know, whether the orders he's been given, not only whether they're smart, but whether they're legal. So I'm willing to give the cops themselves who are getting these orders a little bit of wiggle room, although there is a certain point. It's hard to – you can't identify it, I don't think, with an articulable test. It's kind of common sense under the circumstances. But there is a point where if they're asked to do something that's blatantly illegal and immoral, they have to resist doing that, and they should resist doing it. It puts them in a very hard spot. But – you know, I don't think it's their call to make whether they're conducting themselves in a way that deprives the government of political legitimacy. I think that's above their pay grade. But in terms of being asked to do things that are blatantly unconstitutional or illegal, sure, the cop on the street has to say no.
It's so strange. I was talking to my wife about, you know, going back when we could go back to Missouri to visit my parents, for instance, right? And take the grandkids to see the grandparents. When would that be okay? When would that be safe? And then we start having this bizarre conversation that kind of sent chills down my spine. Well, I don't know if we'd cross through this state or drive through that state. I'm not even sure. What, you know, Pennsylvania plates? What if we're parked in Ohio overnight and we... I mean, what a weird Andy. You know, that's Orwellian, yeah. That conversation.
I'm glad you bring that up, Chris, because what the Supreme Court says is that the right to travel between states for American citizens is fundamental, constitutional, and almost beyond restriction. And while it is the purpose of the government of the United States, the federal government, obviously to protect us from outside threats, that's non-American alien threats to the United States. The purpose of the formation of the Union was to allow American citizens to travel from place to place virtually without restriction. Now, the government has a right, or at least a power, to tamp down on infectious disease. That's a legitimate aim of government. But they are not allowed to treat you in Missouri as if Philadelphia is an alien place, even though everybody in America knows Philadelphia is an alien place. I mean, let's try to keep it real here. But seriously, they are not, you know, the interior of the United States. The Supreme Court has said part of the right of Americans to travel from place to place is to be welcome in another state as a welcome guest, not a hostile alien. And you have to be given the same privileges and immunities of citizenship as anybody in the host state. And in fact, you can move without restriction to the host state if you decide to. So I think one of the things that's going to have to be taken on and dealt with the courts, and I hope they do it but quick, is this whole idea that these governors seem to have that they can stop people from out of state, Americans from out of state, from coming into their states.
Like Delaware, Delaware has done it. Neighboring Delaware has already said, yep, you come into Delaware with a Pennsylvania plate, we'll stop you.
Yeah, well, Chris, I think you and I talked about this last week. The history of our country is that when you have a crisis kind of situation, there's always overreach by the executive branch that has to carry out all the police powers, and the courts and the legislatures tend to not want to deal with this stuff until after the crisis has subsided. And then they issue rulings that hopefully create norms for the next crisis. I don't think this is going to wait for the next crisis. I think the courts are going to have to entertain this preposterous idea by these borderline fascist governors that out-of-state people can't come into their states. I mean, that's just – it's ridiculous.
So let me ask you about I hope you've got some time, because I want to walk around this a little bit now that I have you. I don't know what kind of time you have, but if you have it, I would love to spend some time with you. Okay. Let me ask you about these governors. You know, Tom Wolf's doing this somewhat in Pennsylvania. I know in Michigan. Like, Walmart's open, and they cordon off with, you know, caution tape, seeds to plant in your garden, or car seats, because they say that's not life-sustaining. So it's like, you can sell this, you can't sell that. Lowe's is open, and I can go buy plants at Lowe's, but my nursery down the street isn't open to buy plants and flowers. I, this kind of cherry pick. He can open, she can't stay open. He's got to close, he can stay open. Pennsylvania doesn't let you sell cars online, you know, so you got people advertising in Pennsylvania to come buy a car in New York. It's nuts, Andy. What's the legality of all that stuff?
Well, I think it's very simple, Chris. What everybody needs to do, whether it's an aisle or a business or whatever else, is just say that what's going on inside is abortions, and then they'll leave you alone. You'll always be able to do
right.
whatever you like.
Right.
But you know, this is way over the top, and the real problem with it is a lot of it is getting very politicized. That, you know, in San Francisco, of course.
Yeah.
About a week ago, you know, now remember in San Francisco, they're letting out gangbangers and dope dealers and everyone they can empty the prisons with because it's, you know, it's antithetical to social distancing. And in point of fact, now that they have Chisa Boudin, who is the son and foster son of Weather Underground terrorists, they've elected him as their district attorney. The whole idea of incarceration is so passe, and it's part of the racist criminal justice system that we have to get rid of and all that stuff. So
yeah, Larry Krasner here in Philadelphia too. He's a lunatic as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So any excuse to let people out of prison, and you know, under those circumstances, they cited the first person in San Francisco about a week ago for violating the social distancing restrictions. It was an 86-year-old man who was protesting by handing leaflets out outside a Planned Parenthood clinic. So picture this. I mean, you have gang guys who've committed serious crimes, and they're pushing to let them out of jail, and they want to cite this guy. So I think that people are not going to stand for authoritarian enforcement that is way beyond common sense and that in a very fundamental way restricts their fundamental rights, and they are particularly not going to stand for politicized enforcement, which is what we're getting. I mean, you read that list of all those restrictions. I noticed in all those lists, or one of them at least that I saw last night, that union activities are essential.
Yes.
So they have to go.
Right.
You know, I mean, now look, I don't have a problem with union activities. You know, God bless them. Let them have whatever activities they want. But what I'm saying is, when this stuff becomes so blatantly, unabashedly politicized, and that it becomes obvious that this crisis, which has some real elements to it, is being used not for purposes of public safety, but to advance the progressive agenda, I do not think people are going to put up with that for a long time.
So if I'm a small, but just to be clear, do I have a case if I'm just going with nursery because that's what's top of my mind. So I'm a nursery. I sell plants and flowers and all that sort of stuff and mulch and all that kind of good stuff. And I can't stay open. I can't sell anything. My business has got to be closed, but Lowe's literally sells the same thing. Home Depot sells the same thing, and they can sell those products. Do I have a court case?
Yeah, I think you do. I mean, it doesn't mean... Now, look, I should preface this because ethically I have to. I'm not giving people legal advice. You're asking me a policy question. I'm trying to give you a policy answer because I'm not allowed to give people legal advice in that way. But I think that the inequity of the way this is all being enforced is going to be a very profound issue when all this stuff gets litigated, particularly not just the unequal economic station of like the small business guy versus the big store, that, you know, there's no rational reason to treat them differently, yet the state is treating them differently. But also all of this politicized enforcement where, you know, you can they'll let you go to the drive-through at McDonald's, but you can't go to a drive-through Christian religious ceremony.
Right.
Where, you know, where everybody keeps their windows rolled up and there's obviously no chance of transmitting the disease under those circumstances, and they act like they're going to close those down too. To me, that's obviously blatantly hostile to religion, and it obviously infringes people's fundamental rights, and it's got to stop.
Andy, can I take a 2-minute timeout, come back and talk to you about Bill Barr, DOJ,
sure.
And where that stands?
Be delighted.
Thank you, my friend. That's Andrew C. McCarthy, National Review Online, Fox News contributor. phase two of this conversation. We pivot now to what we learned in the document dump on Friday about James Comey's DOJ, well, really Barack Obama's DOJ, which Andy has consistently said, you don't do investigations like this without it rising to the purview of the presidency. That's next on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
Will FISA abuses really be prevented going forward, given what happened here, where FISA judges are not given critical pieces of information, material facts about evidence that inform the government's okaying the surveillance of American citizens?
You know, I think it's possible to put in a regime that would make it very hard either to willfully circumvent FISA or to do so sloppily without due regard for the rights of the American person involved.
Ron Johnson, the senator from Wisconsin, writes in the Wall Street Journal on Friday afternoon, "Let it sink in that the FBI knew at least some of its evidence against the Trump campaign, maybe more, was likely part of a Russian disinformation campaign, evidence from a source that was central and essential for getting the first FISA warrant. It isn't clear what, if anything, the FBI did to determine whether their investigation was based in substantial part on Russian information." Big document dump on Friday. What was that about? Andrew C. McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, National Review Online, Fox News contributor, back with us. So, Andy, how do you read what happened Friday? Set it up for us.
Well, I'm glad, Chris, that they're finally catching up to common sense. I'm gratified by that. And the reason I say that is my book about the investigation that we've talked about a number of times came out in early August of last year. And I had a chapter in it about the Steele dossier that was called Narrative as Intelligence as Disinformation, the Steele dossier. So it seemed to me, like going carefully through it, that it was so patently obvious that there was disinformation involved in this that it was just a common sense deduction. So now what we're finding is there were, as one would figure if you had access to the classified record, which I didn't have, you know, there's a paper trail all over the place that told these guys in, neon flashing fashion that the Steele dossier was probably, at least in part, maybe even in large part, a product of Russian disinformation. Eric Felton, who's a terrific reporter who writes occasionally at National Review, writes at Real Clear Investigations, wrote a piece, I want to say about a year and a half ago, pointing out that Steele was made available to senior people in the State Department's intelligence division, and that they basically ignored most of what he said and took it with a grain of salt because they thought that they assumed it was the Putin regime spin because of Steele's client list, which included people like Oleg Deripaska, who's a major aluminum oligarch who's known to be close to Putin. I've been arguing for over a year that if Steele was getting his information from those kinds of sources, it was because he was being spun, and what the FBI was being told was, in terms of Russia, was what Putin wanted the FBI to be told. And that just seems to me to have been common sense. I didn't go into this with an agenda to knock Steele or tag him with Russian disinformation. It's just, if you look carefully at what his appalling reports say, and you look carefully at everything that we knew about who his clients were, what business he was in, what people around the government thought of his work product, and then just read it for yourself. I mean, one of the things I thought, and I make this clear in the book, that's amazing is everybody keeps talking about what a fine, great intelligence officer this guy was, and I'm willing to say, look, I'm not familiar with his work while he was in the British intelligence service. Maybe there was a time in life that he was a very good, competent intelligence agent, but I have my doubts because what's in these reports some of it is just, if it wasn't so serious, it would be laugh out loud ridiculous.
And so, Andy, when people call me, I'm still getting these. You and I have talked about this on the podcast and on this show for a year. I mean, a year. Literally, we've been talking about it. And I'm going to ask this question again because I got another angry call today. Damn it. When are we going to see people pay here? When are we going to see jail? Now we've got documented evidence that the FBI knew. Now we know beyond a shadow of a doubt they knew this was flimsy at best, and they went for the FISA warrant anyway. So when are we going to see people prosecuted? Barr is now talking. I mean, Barr is not just saying, well, it looks sloppy or whatever. He's now saying this was malfeasance. I mean, Barr is using some very aggressive verbiage in his interview with Laura Ingraham. So people are asking, does that mean prosecution? Do you still continue to say prosecuting people for this would be difficult?
Yes, but difficult is different from impossible, Chris, which is what you and I have discussed all this time. I've never said the case can't be made. What I'm saying is it's very uphill because it's a lot easier for analysts to be able to say that government officials clearly abuse their power, which I think is obvious here, versus saying you can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they violated a federal criminal statute. Like, for example, the most obvious example is the civil rights statutes, which is, if I were a prosecutor, that's what I'd be looking at this under.
Somebody like, just so I can clarify, you would, as a prosecutor, you would be looking at, say, someone like Carter Page's civil rights were violated in this investigation.
Well, I'd be looking at Donald Trump's civil rights.
Okay.
Because Chris, just to be specific about it, because I don't want people to think I'm like, talking out of my hat here. The Civil Rights Acts talk about government activities that obstruct and impede improperly with the exercise of people's constitutional rights, which include seeking public office, which is a privilege in this system that all of us are entitled to pursue.
So we could make this really simple, because I believe in simplicity in trying to communicate this, because when you start talking about anecdotal players, even though that may be a totally legitimate charge, Is it easiest and simplest to understand Donald Trump's civil rights were violated in this investigation and try to prosecute from that perspective?
Well, I think you could look at anybody. So, and you mentioned Carter Page. Obviously, Carter Page, I think, has a civil lawsuit that he's brought claiming that his civil rights were infringed on. What I'm saying is, if this was an intentional, willful conspiracy or an intentional willful scheme to prevent Americans from doing things that the Constitution allows them to do, so that you're misusing government authority to prevent people from enjoying their constitutional privileges and immunities, then there's a possibility of a suit. Now, I want to stress again, Chris, it's not an easy lawsuit because the police are entitled to investigate, and they don't. You don't have to be guilty of a crime for the police to investigate. If that were the case, then police activity would be paralyzed. So the police have to be given a considerable degree of rhythm when they're acting within their official capacity, and they have to have a right to be wrong as long as they're wrong in good faith. So the uphill part is you really have to prove a willful purpose to violate somebody's constitutional rights, which is why it's a tough case, but it's not an impossible case. It's not like no one's ever been prosecuted.
I'm sure everyone follows this, so I'm dumbing it down purely for my own, so I'm just certain I understand what you're saying. Bill Barr would be the one to bring this, assuming, right? Presumably he would be the one that would bring it.
The Justice Department has jurisdiction to enforce the civil rights statutes, which are part of federal law.
So he has to go to court effectively and make the case that James Comey, in a very specific way, for very specific purposes, and he can prove it, tried to thwart Donald Trump's civil rights in running for president of the United States. And we have proof that he had motivating reason to do it. There was an underlying nefarious reason to do it. Not just that he did it badly, but there was a reason why. And it's that reason why that's difficult to prove. Is that...
Well, in principle, Chris, in the abstract, what you're saying is right. The reason I say that is I don't want to single out Comey or any other person because okay. everybody's presumed innocent. It's not just that I have a relationship with Comey years ago. As you know, I've been very critical of the way that he conducted himself here. But my point is that, you know, as the director of the FBI, he could have a level of generalized knowledge that isn't as specific as some of the people who were doing the actual stuff that would be proved in a case. So I don't want to single out, you know, I don't want to single out Peter Strzok or Jim Comey or Andy McCabe or Lisa Page or that whole crew. Any prosecutor who would be looking at this would have to look at every single potential suspect individually. And the hard thing in a case like this, especially when you're dealing with people who are very high up, is that you have to prove individualized knowledge, intent, and willfulness, which is not the easiest thing. You got to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. But I don't think the Attorney General of the United States, as shortly ago as a week ago, would be talking about this in the framework of a criminal investigation if the Justice Department were not serious, at least about looking at this as a criminal case.
Wow. Okay. And does that mean each individual, I got to run, but does that mean each individual that you'd named, if we're all looking at, let's just say, as a general matter, we're looking at Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, and on and on. Are you looking at those as individual cases or all part of a big roundup group in one lawsuit?
What I did as a prosecutor, and I think what most prosecutors do, is you have a general idea what you're looking at, if you're looking at under the civil rights statutes or some other statutes, and then you look at what your evidence says, and you follow where the evidence goes. You don't say, all right, Peter Strzok, and then, you know, look at it that way. You look at the case, and if the case takes you to Peter Strzok, then it's Peter Strzok. I don't mean to single him out. Again, I don't know what the evidence is.
But I mean, could you nab multiple people in one prosecution?
That's what you usually do. Okay. Most federal cases are conspiracy cases.
Okay. Well, then, okay, so you're saying your read is that Barr is trending that way. That's your read.
I want to stress that I don't think that it makes the case any easier.
Yeah.
And he said in that interview, you know, we're talking about something that's beyond mere sloppiness here.
Yep.
The fact that you get past that threshold gets you closer to a criminal case, but it doesn't get you there.
That's huge. Mr. McCarthy, it is great to kick off a week with you. I appreciate your brain, as always. We all do.
Thanks, Chris. Great to talk to you.
Ball of Collusion is the book you must pick up that Andy wrote. It's the book on this issue. Well, before any of the reporting that's being done present day, you got to go pick it up. Folks, I don't want to make too much of this, but what Andy McCarthy just said is significant to me. I haven't heard him say it quite like this before. Donald Trump's civil rights were violated here. We've always talked about it in terms of General Flynn or Carter Page, but have you heard it said that Donald Trump's civil rights have been violated? I have not. That seems newsworthy to me. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Now, the question is, will when Barr brings the case, remember, Andy made the point that the kind of the money quote from Barr is that this takes time to build a case. It does take time because you have to. That's what's been so maddening for so many of us. And I know you understand this, but it took me a while, and Andy had to really work with me for the better part of a year for me to understand that. It's not just that you and I know that James Comey is a deep state guy that hates Trump's guts. It's not just that we know Andrew McCabe hates Trump's guts. It's not just that we know Peter Strzok and Lisa Page hate Trump's guts. It's not that we know these inspectors generals hate Trump's guts. It's not just that we know Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci on the White House Coronavirus Task Force are big Democrats and probably hate Trump's guts, too. Look, we can instinctively understand and know that all day long. You're talking about a court of law now, though, and that's different. And I don't mean to sound, please don't misunderstand me as speaking down here. I know you understand this. I just, for a long time, I didn't. I was very emotional about it. I was screaming from the top of my lungs like you might have been. It's so obvious. They hate Trump's guts. It's so obvious. He's a donor to this, or he's got a wife who ran for that, or they're on a call talking about how much they hate. But in a court of law, you have to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, reasonable doubt, you got to prove that these people, in a calculated, purposeful way, were trying to take Donald Trump out politically. You got to prove it. In a region, by the way, with judges and a judicial system that is inclined to be favorable to the defense, big government. It's tough, and Barr knows the rules. He knows the law. He knows what he's got to do. He knows the hill he's got to climb. He knows the time it's got to take to build a case. It takes time to build a case, he said. So we're diligently pursuing this, but it's got to be ironclad. It's hard to do. You can't just have it's fine for you and I to say, we know Comey doesn't like Trump. We know Comey hates Trump's guts or whatever. We can say that, and we can say it with certainty. But can we prove it? It's very hard to prove. I mean, think of that. If you had to prove someone really hated somebody, you've got to have evidence of that. If they took actions to harm someone because they personally dislike them, that can often be very tough to prove, particularly when you're dealing with people who are sophisticated and know how to get away with stuff without their fingerprints being on it. I know you get this. It's just it's often hard for people, you know, who are angry and feel like there's a two-tier justice system, and there is. They want to know, why aren't people going to jail? Why isn't Barr working harder to jail these guys? I think Barr wants to very much. I think Barr knows exactly what you and I know. I think if you had Barr in his living room and the two of you were having drinks over dinner, he said, Bill, are these sleazeballs? Do they hate Trump? Were they trying to get him? He goes, absolutely they were. They all were. Obama on down. They all knew what they were doing. They were all trying to take him out. Well, Bill, then why don't you prosecute him? Well, because now you're talking about Bill Barr, Attorney General. I have to wear my hat. I got to wear my lawman hat, and I got to go make a case in court. And you're asking me to prove to a jury and to a judge these people hated Donald Trump and took these actions to sandbag his campaign. Now, as a prosecutor, that's a much tougher thing than just our hunch here over dinner and drinks. Not even a hunch. We just know their politics aren't Trump's. How do you put that? I don't mean to over-explain this. I know you get it. I'm trying to. Jim Kenney is probably never going to appear on this show.
Probably not.
Why not, Fast Eddie?
He has been extremely elusive to the media. Anyone that would challenge him, there's no way he would respond.
Can you prove that?
I can prove that he hasn't been on.
But can you prove why he won't come on?
No.
That's my point. We know, we understand, he doesn't want to come to a place where he's being challenged. We know, we understand, he doesn't want to answer tough questions. We know, we understand, his politics aren't mine. We know. We all understand, wink. But if I had to go to a jury and say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Jim Kenney is guilty of evading media appearances on shows like mine. He won't appear on my radio show because he doesn't like my politics and he doesn't want to answer tough questions. Well, then a responsible court of law would say, all right, you got to prove that. Prove it. How do you know he doesn't want to come on your show? How can you prove he won't? I mean, they can say, what can they say? That what they would say to defend themselves is, well, the schedule won't allow. Well, he's early in the morning. Well, the mayor's got to... Blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's 1,000 legitimate reasons. The burden of proof is on me. I got to prove he's evading my show. All he has to say is, schedule doesn't work out. tough time of day for me, or whatever. 610-850-0990. Let's go to Paul in Delaware. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Chris.
The first state where I'm not allowed to drive in your state, Paul, so I'm glad you called.
Okay. Well, I'm not allowed to drive either because I have a cell phone, so I'm pulling over.
Good man.
So, I think that contrary to the textbook stuff about trying to prove a case in federal court, the Roger Stone, poke up some charges, get somebody to testify against him, shop out a judge who's already proved for bias, have that judge exclude any Republican from the from the jury pool, get jurors who are, former Democratic candidates for various offices. And it doesn't hurt at all to stage a SWAT, minor army operation against the defendant to make sure you poison any other public, sentiment against.
You're saying that's what Barr should do.
Well, I mean, that is the way that you do a federal case. We have learned.
Yeah, right. No, you're right. Of course. Yes, that's a very, very valid point. The heavy-handed way in which they treated Roger Stone. Look, the point is Barr, even if Barr went that way, there's coordination. He made the statement. You got to prepare for something like this. It's not easily done. So anyway, I just, this is always where I feel a little defensive of Bill Barr. People say, I don't believe it. Nothing's going to happen. Two-tiered system of justice. Yes, there is some truth to that, but given how hard it is to build a case, a slam dunk prosecutable, I have evidence these people acted with malice case, it's hard if properly done. This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
And finally, new rule, you can't yell at someone for breaking a rule you just made up. Scientists, yes, scientists who are generally pretty liberal, have been naming diseases after the places they came from for a very long time. Zika is from the Zika forest, Ebola from the Ebola River, Hantavirus, the Hantan River. There's the West Nile virus and guinea worm and Rocky Mountain spotted fever and, of course, the Spanish flu. MERS stands for Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. It's plastered all over airports and no one blogs about it. So why should China get a pass? Congressman Ted Lieu tweeted, "The virus is not constrained by country or race. Be just as stupid to call it the Milan virus." No, that would be way stupider because it didn't come from Milan. And if it did, I guarantee we'd be calling it the Milan virus. Jesus Christ, can't we even have a pandemic without getting offended when they name the line?
Harumph! Harumph! Harumph!
Beautiful.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Give the governor a harumph.
Harumph! You watch your ass.
I will probably let that entire monologue play during my podcast today, which I'm going to head over and produce right after this show today. I hope you'll check out the podcast, by the way. If you haven't listened to it yet, I think you'll enjoy it. Free to download. Subscribe to it. If you're an Apple iTunes user, I hope you will give it 5 stars in the Apple iTunes store. That is very, very helpful in furthering the cause, spreading the good word out there. Maybe a written review. Always really appreciate that. This is the Chris Stigall Show podcast. Easy to find wherever you listen to podcasts. So Dr. Fauci appears with Jake Tapper and says this weekend that he can't be sure. Jake's already asking an interesting question. What about November? What about the election? Can we be sure? The election, it'll be safe to go out there and vote. Fauci said, well, I hope these measures we're taking now and these things that we're going to learn, if there is a resurgence, a rebound this fall, I hope, I can't be sure, but hopefully we'll have learned a couple of things. Now, folks, you start to see how this is all lining up, don't you? Fast Eddie asked me, he said, Chris, are we ever going to get to the bottom of this Russiagate Comey conspiracy takedown? Should Donald Trump lose in the fall? Psh, no! This thing will go away as fast as it came. if Donald Trump should lose this fall. And may I submit to you that a really helpful way in making this all go away is coronavirus. I don't want you to misunderstand the really important, significant, frankly, political implications of keeping coronavirus alive and well as a story for the next months. It's important. It's vital. In fact, I would submit that Corona is now going to be Joe Biden's running mate. Biden COVID 2020. Go ahead and make the bumper sticker. Joe Biden's campaign is going to dine out almost exclusively on coronavirus. They're going to try to hang coronavirus and are dealing with coronavirus around the president's neck, make everything from the spread of the disease to the decline in the economy his fault, his problem. And if they can get everybody talking about that and maybe even downright afraid to even turn out and vote this fall, afraid, so afraid to turn out and vote this fall that he'll have no choice, we'll have no choice as a nation but to open up voting from home. You can see it all set up. It's all beautifully being set up. I'm not going as far as to say coronavirus was some kind of myth or made up. I mean, I think it's very, very real. I just think it's an opportunity. I think Russia failed, Ukraine failed, impeachment failed, and then Corona came, and they thought, oh, well, maybe there's our ticket. See you tomorrow.